part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
But I appreciated seeing you in person.
Yeah, because I gave the Harley Quinn poster and the cat sticker to my daughter.
Oh,
and
nice.
She loved them both. She went, I know this. But yes, you have it in your drawer. And she ran upstairs to get her other ones.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's awesome. Good. Well, I'm glad she enjoys it, which makes me want to keep working on it. So it's, for me, it's not like you. You have a business concern. I am just trying to do it when I can. So, and get it in there. So, but thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm glad that she enjoyed it. I mean, I gave you the book, right? Like, did I give you a copy of the book?
I did.
I'm not sure. Either way. Thanks for stopping by my booth. I appreciate it.
Of course, dude.
Yeah, I was trying to get back over there, so to your side, but it was so far away, and I'm the only person manning my table, so I was just like, even just going to the bathroom. Like, I left once, and a guy came back, and he was looking for me. And he was like, where did he go? And people were like, I don't know where he went. And I was like, dude, when you got to go, you got to go. You know, you can't just stay at your booth. But anyway,
at conventions, when he goes to a bathroom break, he leaves a note saying, artist on a heroin break.
That's nice. I like that. Well, let's not waste any more time talking about this because unfortunately I have a bit of a hard stop. Yeah. This time around, which I'm very sorry, Neil, because I actually very much, I love this book. I won't even hold back. I mean, every time you come on, I mean, your stuff has always been really good. And I should start off just by saying that I'm speaking to Neil Gibson of T-Pub Comics or T-Pub Publishing. Like, what is the title of your business there, sir? I always forget.
So originally we were called T-Publishing. T-Publications. Because when I started getting into comics, I found out that comic shops are different from bookshops. So bookshops are by authors. You have Asimov, Archer, like that.
Yeah.
But people don't really care about the author. They care about the character. So it's Spider-Man, it's Superman. It's Spider-Man. So I thought that if all our titles began with T, if someone liked one of our titles and they saw the logo in the T section, oh, there's another logo there. Oh, and there, and there. They'd be able to get all our titles. So that's why we were T Publications. However, everyone just started calling us T-Pub.
Oh.
So we changed to T-Pub, and then no one knew that A, we made comics, or B, we're even in publishing.
Really?
So with T Publications, you know it's a publication or something.
Yeah.
But with T-Pub, no one knew what it was, so we switched it to T-Pub Comics.
Gotcha. So it's T-Pub Comics officially. And the reason that you're on is because there is currently a Kickstarter. I like to let people know at the top of the show going on for your new book. It's called Tuned, correct?
That's right. Again, with the T title.
Yeah, that's right. Again with the T. Well, it's funny because the advanced copy that I got is a little bit of a different title with the word tuned in there. So I wanted to make sure I got the title that people should search for on Kickstarter correct. And it is called Tuned, right?
That's right. The copy you have was called Finely Tuned.
Yeah.
It was originally titled, no one's going to care about this.
Of course they do. Like, this is interesting stuff. This is why we do podcasts. Go on. I'm interested.
So shops, retailers find it, we're moving away from the T titles. We'll have a few more coming, but then we're going to move away from it because they get confused, like especially transmissions and transdimensional.
Uh-huh.
People get confused. Like, did I order that or not? Or like, and they, it's hard. It's like authors, apart from George R. R. Martin, try and have all their characters have different letters.
Sure.
George R. R. Martin deliberately had Tywin and Tyrion Lannister because that's what happens in real life.
Yeah.
But to make it easier on your readers, you try to have different characters and make everyone visually different so it's easy to distinguish.
Sure.
So Unfortunately, my manager in the US, he gets confused with the titles I'm coming out with. He goes, why are they all called with T? So I realized we have to stop doing that. And so even though it was called Tune, we thought we'd like change it to Fine Tune. And the test we did with all the reviewers, like yourself, they all said, no, what are you doing?
So much for managers. Wow. So I never made the connection where a lot of your titles start with a T because your company is called T Pub, or was that just a coincidence?
No, it's deliberate. You didn't know.
I didn't know that. Like, I never made that connection. I just was like, oh, there's a new great T Pub book. I want to check it out and, you know, talk with Neil about it. So I never made that connection. Oh, that's great. What a great idea. So now is everything going to start with an A? Is that it, to get it to the top of the, like, in the beginning? Like, but no, I mean, so anyway, the book is called Tune. It is currently on Kickstarter. You have funded already, which, you know, I thank you for coming onto the show, you know, because what do you need to chat to me for? You've already made your money, but people should go to Kickstarter, search Tune, and throw more money at it, correct?
No, not everyone should. I'll be very honest about this.
Oh.
Some people are sensitive readers. And you don't like shocking scenes or dark scenes, don't check it out.
Gotcha.
But if you like stuff that makes you think and stays with you for a couple of days and you want to reread and a little dark, it's for you.
Yeah.
So some people, they have quite tough lives, frankly, and they want to come home and they want to have a beer and they want to watch an action comedy.
Yeah.
Which is totally cool. This is not the book for them.
Yeah.
This is a book for people who actually want to think about what they're watching or reading.
Yeah. No, I mean, I mean, in a general sense, right? But I'm saying, like, anyone who's interested in good comics, in my opinion, should go check this out. Because, I mean, what I was saying to you in the email recently was, like, this quite honestly, I mean, Amputation Capital was the last one, right? That was the name of the last one, right? And I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. And I loved it. And then you send me this, and I was like, oh, this is great. And the thing is like, your writing, your work has always been good. I've always been like, oh, T-Pub, they always do like really great stuff. But it seems to me like you keep getting better and better. Like you keep things, like the writing gets better and better. The stories get a little bit more expansive and wider with every title. And then the artists that you collaborate with, they're all kind of like different styles, but the ones that you've been collaborating with lately are even more like, it's more of a like unique look to every book. Am I making sense?
You are. It's a funny thing. So you can go for a big name artist,
yeah,
who is quite expensive, but we've always gone for up and comers,
yeah,
who then make their way in the industry afterwards. Just because, well, actually, in large part because they're cheaper, but also it's because when I first started making comics, I didn't know. I did it as a hobby to see if I could make something people liked.
Sure.
So I believe in giving everyone a chance to start.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So I look for different art styles that are different. And if I'm getting in trouble here again, but if you look at DC, they have a house style.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's a good thing. I think having more diverse looks is a good thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I really find it interesting about, like, particularly your titles, because if you looked at like Amputation Capital and then you look at Tuned, it's like two completely different styles, but there's still like very much that sort of horror, kind of like Twilight Zone, kind of like creepy sort of, you know, thing that your company kind of like set itself up with, right? Like, I mean, that seems to be the thing that you've always been interested in, is this sort of like Twilight Zone kind of like fantasy, right? Or even dark horror, correct? I mean, you started off with something called Twisted Dark, right?
So it's not what the company's interested in, it's what I do personally.
Sure.
So I have another title that was called I see all these T titles, they are confusing. It's called Turncoat. It's a superhero comedy. It was written by Ryan O'Sullivan, and Plague Klaus was the illustrator. Plague Klaus did a great job on it.
Okay.
And I think it's absolutely hilarious. It's great work. And I edited that. And so that is not dark. It's very funny, but it's very different because I didn't do any of the writing involved with it.
Okay.
But I was more heavily involved with the other books I didn't write, like Transmissions or Transdimensional. So I changed the endings of both of those myself to give them a dark twist to it, because that's just what my personal style is. But there's two things. I enjoy writing, but I actually love editing more. I love taking good work and making it excellent.
Yeah.
So, but that relies on other writers. And what's funny is that giving feedback to writers is either it's very easy or it's very hard. There seems to be no in between.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Some people go, oh, that's a good idea. Let's make it. Because they don't care who's right. They care what's right.
Sure.
Others are very precious and go, ah, how could you dare challenge my creative genius?
Oh, okay. And what kind of writer are you, though? I mean, coming from the other side.
Well, I like to think, I genuinely think, I don't care whose idea it was. Does it make it and work better?
Yeah.
Because, and I'll be very honest about this, I forget half of the stuff I write.
Okay.
I have so many stories squirreled away, and I forget about it. I remember I read one that I found. It was called Could This Get Any Worse? And I'd forgotten I'd written it. And I remember reading it and going, oh God, this is horrible.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, why don't we get to sort of the elevator pitch of Tuned? Like, what is it about? Like, what is your sort of like basic description? Because to me, well, I'll let you talk, but why don't you tell anybody out there who has not heard of the project yet what it is? Because quite honestly, I mean, it plays with a lot of things that I love, but let people know what Tuned is about.
Well, the elevator pitch is it's Seven meets Heroes.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Because it's, do you think that is accurate?
Yeah, I think it's very accurate. I was trying to think of like how to describe it myself, but that's like the combination, but can you go like deeper into a story? I mean, that gets me interested, but can you go a little bit more into the description of the story? Because that is very apt. Like I was like, oh, nailed it. But can you go a little bit more into, sure, you know, the details?
Sure. Well, sure. The opening scene is pretty graphic.
Yeah.
And it's this guy who's just talking on his own. And if you want me to, I can narrate the opening scene if you want. Let me know.
That's up to you. This is your time.
Well, I want to make sure your listeners are interested, keep interested in this. Okay, so the opening scene is this guy in a house in the country in the US, and there's a kettle that's a glass kettle. So you can see it starting to boil slightly in back next to him. You can't see his face. He's got a hat on. He's in the darkness. He's going. Accuracy in Hollywood has always irritated me. They never get electricity quite right in movies. Like, especially if someone touched something and get thrown across the room. Yes, that can happen, but that's, you contract your muscles, you throw yourself. But it's the death scenes that really get me. They never get it right. You see, when electricity meets resistance, in this case, it'll be your flesh. And you start to pan around the room. You see he's talking to someone who's tied up and restrained to a chair and is, gagged and bound. When electricity meets resistance, in this case, your flesh, it turns to heat. Your cell, the liquid in your cells will turn to steam and burst through the cell walls. Your eyeballs will probably melt. At least that's happened to me twice before when I've done this. But I want to know exactly what will happen if I flick this switch. He touches the switch, and you see the guy bound up. He's going, so he backs off.
Yeah.
Perhaps I shouldn't do this. It was a long time ago. But you were bad, and bad people need to be punished. And he flicks the switch, and the guy is electrocuted, and he starts to steam, and there's this vapor rising from him. And then the guy leans forward for the first time. You see what he looks like. And he's very greasy, dark hair and cracked fingernails. And he's got a fake nose. And he takes off his fake nose, walks over to the dead body that's steaming, and then inhales the smell of the guy. And then he has a notebook and writes down what it smells like. And he taps the next name on the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a gruesome opening scene, but that's it's designed to get your attention. And it's this guy, he was part of an army project where they were trying to. So America is concerned about the rising strength of China.
Yeah.
And right now, America has gunboats 10 miles offshore in China. They do that genuinely. They have nuclear patrols on the Russian border.
Mm.
Russians don't do that to the US, but the US does it to Russia. No one knows that in the news because we like to portray them as the bad guys. But how would we feel once in like 30 years, China starts having US having their own gunboats 10 miles off US shore?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different matter, right?
Yeah.
So people are scared. So this scientist approaches someone, a branch of the military, says, how would you like soldiers that can, on command, suddenly become stronger, faster, more intelligent, more obedient, and have more stamina?
Mm.
Well, yeah. That's just nonsense talking. No, I can do it for you.
Yeah.
But if I do it, there's a price.
Yeah.
And there's no charge right now. But when I prove it's possible, you'll pay me what I'm worth. And so they agree, and they sign up some of these soldiers to try this. And something goes wrong, and they shut the project down. Everyone's deprogrammed. But later, something happens, and this guy who feels he was wronged starts coming back for revenge on what happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that sound?
That's perfect. I mean, and, you know, for anyone listening, for me, it like hit all the buttons of like stuff that I love. I mean, we've had discussions on this. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Brian De Palma movie called The Fury. And then there's Stephen King's Firestarter. Like in the late 70s, early 80s, there was this run of like ESP sort of like psychic movies. And that isn't necessarily this, but it is the subject matter of like sort of like Captain America, right? Where it's like soldiers being experimented on. And then you've added a layer of like serial killer disturbedness like into it. And it just, for me, it works like perfectly. Like as I was reading, I was like, oh, this is great. I mean, it reminds me of elements of like Stephen King and, you know, Marvel Comics and like all that stuff, like all blended into one, into like just like a really great concoction.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really, I mean, anytime there's superpowers in something, I like sit up and I'm like, oh, okay. Cause that's just my jam. You know what I mean? And I was just like, oh, okay. And it's, and then having sort of like a serial kind of killer type character with weird abilities, like that's just like all bets are off. You know what I mean? Like that's like the perfect, like that's like the 28 days later run. And oh, the zombies run now? Like, oh, we're fucked now. Like, you know what I mean? So I mean this is like a really good combination of disturbing elements. But I mean, that's to me what you at least are known for. Maybe not your company, but you know, you do good horror stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. It's I think it's, yes, I classify it as my first horror. Other people would say different.
But really? You think this is like your first horror?
I don't think I write horror. I write psychological thriller, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, sure. But I mean, there's a balance, right? It's like what is, I mean, there's psychological thriller in this, but there's some pretty horrifying stuff in there, Neil.
In this one, but I think it's my first horror, but I know other people disagree. I guess the issue is I'm a bit like Stephen King in the fact that I hate horror films. They terrify me.
Oh, really? No way. Oh, God, there's no way.
I think the last one I watched was The Ring, which is almost 20 years ago. I watched that.
That was a good one.
I watched that in Houston with a bunch of friends during the day in the city with people. And I was genuinely terrified. If I watched that in the countryside in England in the dark, I would have died. So no, I don't like it.
Wait. So do you like horror novels, like books?
Oh yeah, I love them.
Oh, okay. So wait, what's the difference? I mean, obviously there is a difference, right? But how could you really, like, the novel to me seems like it would be more frightening than the movie because your imagination can get away with you. And when I tend to read something like Stephen King or Robert McCannon or anything like that, then I, like, that sticks with me. Like, I'm walking around the house. Like, horror movies, unless it's like a really impactful one, they don't necessarily stay with me for like days, but a novel will. How can you justify your hatred of horror movies and love of horror novels to me, Neil? Because I find that very confusing.
I guess I'm just never, I'm not scared by books or comics. Except,
really?
Except maybe Junji Ito. I read Uzumaki. It was the first time I ever got chills.
Yeah.
That was the first, that's the only one. But they don't scare me. It's fine. Whereas a horror film, there's so much tension. My sister, in when she watches films, even if it's action films, if it's a dramatic or tense moment, she'll turn the volume down. So that it's less real. It's not so scary. It's not so intense. And I get that. I understand what she's doing. But I think you're ruining the experience of what the creator is trying to do to you.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just simply the same as spicy food, right? Like chili. I don't like it. It makes me cry. It makes my tongue burn. I can't taste the food. It's unpleasant.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy seeing horror films because I get scared. I don't like being scared. But with books or comics, it just makes me think.
That's interesting.
Ooh, that's creepy. Like there was a wonderful. So I didn't particularly like the book It by Stephen King.
Yeah, me too. I'm not my favorite.
But there's this one scene. I'm glad you agree. But there's one scene where these kids, they experience something. So when the clown does this stuff, adults can't see it, but kids can.
Yeah.
But these people are exempt. They're adults now because they beat the clown when they're younger, and they can still see the stuff he does.
Yeah.
And they all have fortune cookies.
Yes, I remember this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the film, I just remember the book.
Yeah.
And the disgusting things that they start seeing coming out of these fortune cookies. But as it starts happening, the owner of the restaurant comes in and asks, how was the meal?
Yeah.
And they have to act that, like, oh, it's all great, as these really disgusting things are happening on their plates, which they can see and the owner can't.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a cool concept. What a great scene. That's what I thought. Now, if I'd seen that, I would have thought, ah!
That's so funny to me because I mean the thing that you always hear from, like, say filmmakers or even novelists, or like if you don't show the horror, it's much creepier. And like the ability, I think one of the thing that, like, just to use Stephen King as an example because he's the most probably popular, you know, horror author out there, like, in recent history, you know, it'll always be like that your imagination can run away with you. And that even when I'm reading a Stephen King book or like a horror novel and stuff, like for me, when I'm reading a book and not comics, because I do agree with you that it is very hard for me to read a comic and be genuinely frightened by it, right? Like genuinely frightened. I can get creeped out. I can get grossed out. I can be like, oh, that's disturbing. But a comic will not scare me, but a good novel, that'll freak me out. And there'll be times where I'm just like, oh, okay. And it seems to me that you are able, when you're reading a novel, to sort of detach a bit from that, right? And look at it from a professional view, right? Oh, did I lose you?
So I'm still here. You made me think. That's why I was silent.
Did I stump you?
No, you've made me question, because it's a very good question. To give you an honest answer, I'm not sure how to approach it, because it's possible that my imagination is actually limited, and that I'm not. I was thinking, how do other people experience books?
Uh-huh.
And do they imagine a whole world in their head?
Yeah.
And what the characters look like. I don't imagine what the characters look like. I imagine what they feel.
Okay.
With comics, they give me what they look like, and they give me their emotional state, their body language.
Yeah.
Which is, well, but they give you there's more room for interpretation, which you don't get with film, which is why I like comics. But with film, you get so much more emotion. The music alone and the sound of the voice, and, and if there's any fear or like desperation, or it's no one likes hearing that.
Sure. Oh, this is fascinating to me because, I mean, you know, reading your book, reading several of your books too, I mean, I can't imagine that your imagination would be limited, but what it sounds like to me is going on with you is you're analyzing what you're reading in the writing, and maybe there's a sort of like that will happen to me because I see myself as more of an artist than, you know, a full-fledged like writer, creator and stuff. And I tend to do this while I'm watching movies too, because I was more interested in film when I was younger. When I look at the visual, I'm like, oh, look at what they did. Oh, look at what they did. Like, that's amazing. Look at that shot, or look at that layout, or look at their construction and stuff like that. And it seems to me like when you might be reading a novel or something that you are, and particularly because you just said you do like to edit things, like maybe you're looking at, maybe there's a detachment there where you're not getting like fully absorbed, or you're not letting your imagination go. But it seems like when you're writing or creating a book, that's where you let it all out and let yourself get fully absorbed. Am I making any sense?
You are. You're just wrong.
Okay.
Sorry. That was a joke.
No, it's totally fine.
I'm trying to explain this because, the first time when I watched The Matrix Part 2, The Matrix 1 was amazing. Part 2 wasn't so good, but
yeah, I know.
They did one shot, I remember. It's in the on the freeway, and motorcycle and everything, and you see the camera angle, and you know those wing mirrors that cars have a wing mirror that's just attached to the car, but trucks have a wing mirror that has a gap in attached to the top and the bottom. There's a hole in the middle.
Yeah,
and the camera went through the gap on a moving truck. Yeah. And I thought, it was a CGI truck. I found out later because I had to research it because I was so blown away by it. I thought, I've never seen that before. How cool was that?
Yeah.
And similarly, sometimes with comics, I see great art and I go, oh, wow, that's beautiful. And I don't like either of those situations.
Okay.
I don't like them because even though they're cool, they take me out of the story. If I'm just like going along with the story, I'm not questioning anything. If the story is like twists in a way, and I go, oh, that's really clever. I like to see what they've done there. It's not as good as, holy shit, that happened. Oh, and they just carry on with what the person does next.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So analyzing it to me, ideally, is a secondary thing after I finish the whole story.
Okay.
And I think about it. If I think during while I'm watching it or reading it, well, the fact that it's made me think, it means, that's something I've good. That's good. But it's not as good as if it's seamless.
Gotcha.
And the worst of all is always think, oh, that's shit.
Yeah, well, of course. Which tuned is not shit. It is excellent. It is the absolute opposite of that. I mean, can you talk to me a little bit about your inspiration behind this? Like what? Because, I mean, there's always that silly question that people ask, you know, where it's like, where do you get your ideas from? And I'm not asking that because, you know, it's kind of like, but, you know, you did Amputation Capital and then this is your next book. Why did this have to be your next story? Like, why was this the next thing? Especially if you've got like notebooks or journals or ideas like scribbled down for years and years and years. What was it about this one that made you want to explore it and actually bring it to fruition?
That's a good question. I never thought about it before.
I'm here to ask good questions, Neil. That's what I'm here to do.
I do have three or four other finished graphic novels scripted wise, but okay. I just haven't started the art on it.
Gotcha.
It's like, what do I decide to do next? I think it's because I wanted to try my first horror comic. But also I thought this is the most commercial one I had because I thought this is the most likely one to be adapted for a film.
Sure.
That's one reason behind it. The inspiration behind it became because of I've had many meetings with Hollywood producers, and it's so much bullshit, and it is, and they treat you so nicely, and they speak, but it, I find it very, very, a very strange world. Uh-huh. But anyway, so this producer, he asked me to pitch him something that was had a relatable main hero. And it had a powerful villain who was genuinely scary and had Tarantino-esque scenes and danger.
Wow, that's weird. So,
well, that was the brief, and I delivered, I think.
Sure, sure.
And that was it. So at the time, it was a few years ago, I think. I thought this was my ticket into Hollywood, so I'll do the best I can. Called up two friends actually. One was another writer. We worked through it till 2 a.m. one night, just getting the rough outline of the story. Me pushing it, and I didn't realize the other two how much they suffered with my work ethic.
Oh no.
We got the bare bones done, and the guy disappeared pretty much. So I thought, why do we do all this? And I thought, well, I don't want to waste the work I've done. And I just went back, read back and analyzed it and reread it and rewrote it. There we are.
Sure, sure, sure. Can you talk to me about your artist? I don't want to screw up the pronunciation of the name. Can you pronounce the name for me?
Give it a shot.
Okay, I'm going to say Amen Swissy.
I have no idea how it's pronounced. I call him Amen Swissy.
Amen. Okay. Either way, the art in here is outstanding, and it reminded me a lot of Brian Hitch, his style, or their style.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a lot of Brian Hitch in here. Like, and that will tell you listeners out there how good looking this book is, because I really was like, I mean, there's definitely a lot of like early Brian Hitch for me, where I was like, and I don't think that we would disagree on the fact that Brian Hitch is probably one of the better illustrators out there to have emerged in the last, what, 10 to 20 years, right?
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
So you've definitely discovered a talent in this person. And because I was reading it and I was like, oh, wow, this reminds me a lot. There's definitely sequences and the way that he renders the figures and sort of like the line work and stuff. There's a smoothness to it. And I was just like, wow, this is really, really nice, nice stuff. How did you find him?
Through a friend. Someone approached me at Comic-Con, and he wanted to have he wanted to create an app for comics for the Middle East, for Arabic.
Oh, nice.
And so he asked if he could translate some of my work. So I said, sure. So I got no money from it at all, but that's fine. He's like, you know, trying to do a new app there, and that's great.
Yeah.
But the other using Arab artists and Arab writers, he has other people on his platform, and the prices are much cheaper than US or UK artists.
Oh.
And I saw one of the guys, I couldn't read the Arabic, but I saw his art. Thought, this guy's really good. And so we got in contact that way. But let me say something interesting, actually.
Yeah.
And that's that I almost killed the relationship with Ayman. Entirely my fault, but I had no idea. So the way I give feedback is every art page I get, I send back with boxes, green for the colorist, blue for the letterer, orange for the artist, about what changes I've made or what changes I want or what comments I'd like to make for the future.
Sure.
So that way, rather than doing an email, which I have to check, when they send back the art, I just slap it over the images and I see the boxes, have they made the changes I want?
Yeah.
And apparently my style of communication with him irritated him from the start and got more untenable towards the end of the project.
Oh, really?
But he never said that it was upsetting him at all.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea he was upset until the end, when he said, I have to get this off my chest. Like, I can't work with you anymore. I was like, what? And we had a long conversation about it, right? I genuinely apologized. And I explained everything from my perspective. He was like, oh. And then he apologized for being so upset and for not saying anything. And what he taught me was to use Loom. And so now every feedback I give, I always send a little video of myself telling people what chains I like and why. And it's made such a difference.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, I've been pissing people off without even knowing it. But now they like understand what I want and why. And they say, oh, that makes sense. It's okay with it.
Oh, wow. That seems like such a social media type thing where people just misinterpret text, right? There's no nuance. There's no underlying tone or anything like that to what you're typing or saying and stuff like that. And so you're making these comments, and which, you know, I don't know how you wrote them out. They could just be very matter of fact and direct. And the artist is interpreting it as like, oh my God, like this person hates everything. And that is not your intent at all, right?
Absolutely. Because I was oblivious to it. Anyway, so it was a great lesson. And we're going to work together on future projects. So it's all good now. Just from my perspective, I was like, I genuinely love being corrected. I don't like being told I'm wrong, but I love being corrected because being corrected means I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And then I'm fixing it.
Right? Yeah.
Because no one tells you, you don't know you're making a mistake.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because I caught a couple of like little typos that I'll point out to you after the interview.
Oh,
after
this thing, please let me know.
Yeah, no, there's just one or two little things that I caught, which I've emailed you about in your books before, and you've always been very gracious and like, oh, thank you so much for pointing that out or something. But maybe I should be a comic book proofreader in another life or something. Like, I don't know, but. But I mean, it doesn't take away anything from this story. But that's interesting, because I tend to be the type of person that's much more sensitive because I have less time to work on the things that I do. And when somebody, you know, when your time is like very limited and you're also kind of like a bit of a sensitive individual, I can be that person that you're talking about where it's like, oh, God damn it. Like, I have to go back and do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, because, and it's not necessarily because I'm sensitive or whatever. It's because like, oh, I've only got a half an hour to draw or an hour to, you know what I'm saying? And for me, it's like, if I have to go back, that takes away from, am I making any sense there?
You are. But I think, if I may be so bold,
go for it.
I think you're being told at the right time. If you're being told after the book is published, that's a bad time to be told.
Sure.
So at least now you have the choice in the matter. Do I want to fix it or not?
Yeah.
And if you do want to fix it, fantastic. Thank the person who told you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since you're going down this road of conversation and since you've edited several books, what is your advice to giving feedback? And what is your, you know, to sort of approaching people in the appropriate way? Because as you said, like, I mean, and as we've seen, artists can be sensitive, and then maybe receiving it even, because I mean, it seems like you have a very sort of like matter of fact, like thicker skin than maybe other artists or people do. I mean, there's all different types, and I've said the type that I am. So maybe you and I will never work together on anything except an interview, but I'm just saying, like, what sort of advice can you give to giving and receiving feedback? And we may have talked about this in previous interviews, because I, you know, I think this is like your fourth time on the podcast or fifth. I don't know, but I love having you back. So thank you for doing it. But what is some of your advice on like giving and receiving feedback?
Well, the first of all, let's approach receiving. And I think people should realize that, and most do, that feedback is a gift.
Yeah.
Because it's there to make you get better. Now, let's say you cook a spaghetti bolognese dish, right? And someone says, oh, this would be really better if you added a bunch of sugar to it, or a bunch of, I don't know, chocolate.
Hey.
You can go, okay, thank you for your feedback. I disagree with you, but thank you for trying.
Yeah.
Like, you can, if someone's giving you feedback, because they're genuinely trying to help,
yeah,
or they point out what they don't like about it, first thing is listen. And if you disagree, okay, thank you, I don't agree.
Yeah.
You have that right. You should not bow to it. That's the first thing. But, and here's the other side of this, is that you should always avoid being defensive. I actually have a, from my, I used to be a management consultant, and I have a presentation on feedback that I think is fantastic, is that when you give feedback to someone, when you receive feedback, you are not allowed to explain.
Mm.
You are not allowed to explain, and you are not allowed to get defensive.
Okay.
And the person giving feedback has to do it with, this is how whatever you did or the story is made me feel.
Mm.
Because that way it's not up for debate. Doesn't matter if what you were doing is right or wrong. It made him feel that there were spelling mistakes, so it was lazy. Or made me feel that you were being racially insensitive. Well, I wasn't trying to do that. It doesn't matter. That's what made me feel.
Yeah.
So, and there's a certain set of rules for each point. I can share it with you if you can read this if you like. But that's a structured way to doing it, which people tend to have to be coached onto how to do it.
Interesting.
But my solution is to send emails pointing out what I want changed and piss people off.
That's interesting, because for me, it's kind of been very much a thought process where, like, this is coming from, and this may sound a little touchy-feely, but I'm a Californian. I live in California. I mean, I'm originally from the East Coast, but I've been here for at least 30 years.
Oh,
so.
Convert, the worst type.
Yeah. But I mean, it seems to me like you should accept most, if not all, feedback, at least coming from a place of love, right? Or like appreciation for what you're doing, and not spite or anger or anything like that, right?
Well, if it's coming from spite or anger, then don't even listen to it. Well, yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also, there's a lot of sensitivity coming from artists, and I understand that. I happen to be one of them. And it's interesting to me how I've seen, read a lot of interviews with writers and artists and stuff like that, and how I've seen like how different people deal with criticism or like sort of judgment, either from the fan base and stuff like that, or just like the internet. And it's all fascinating to me, where I'm just like, oh, okay. Because I know that sometimes, like, when it comes to my work, this is called part-time fanboy, like, I can take criticism. I can be like, okay, great, I screwed up and blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to my own thing that I'm using my what I consider like valuable free time and could be rushed, and most of it is probably knowing that I rushed it and knowing what's wrong with it myself, and just hoping that I can just, get past that and move on. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see like how different you can take different feedback in different aspects of your life, right?
Mm. No, definitely. And some people are very sensitive, and some people have a hard skin. They can say whatever you like to them. It's also difficult when you're just doing stuff not face to face, not even sometimes on Zoom.
Yeah.
Emails. It can be interpreted in different ways.
Yeah. Well,
we've gone down a rabbit hole here.
Sorry?
I feel like we've gone down a rabbit hole.
Oh, we have, but that's fine. That's what podcasts are all about. I mean, we are talking about your book, Tuned. It is on Kickstarter. I mean, again, talk to me a little bit about sort of the elements of the military experiment, if you will, before we wrap up, because that to me was kind of like the big sort of fascinating thing. Like, even as a kid, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, grew up in the Reagan era, the fear of the nuclear war, fear of like germ warfare, fear of people, human experimentation and all that stuff, cloning, blah, blah, blah. Can you talk to me about a little bit about like reaching into that and delving into that aspect of it?
What can you be more specific in your question? What do you want to know?
Well, I mean, just generally sort of, I guess, wondering, what you reached towards as inspiration for like the military project. I mean, obviously there's that aspect of the political, right, where you were talking about China and Russia and stuff like that, and how the US itself is being viewed by quote unquote enemies, people overseas. But as far as there's aspects of corporatism in it, right? Because it's a privately developed sort of super soldier, you know, thing where they're like, you'll buy it if you like it. Can you just talk to me about the bits of research you may have done into that? Or was it just completely, you know, hey, this is fictional super soldier, I'm just going to go with it?
So I have a friend who's a psychiatrist in Texas. He's retired now.
Okay.
And he's fascinated by the Tibetan Book of the Dead and psychedelics, like mushrooms.
Nice.
And people who've taken them and what they see are so similar to what the Book of the Dead says, which is what you achieve after a lifetime meditation. So Tibetan monks, they've done brain scans with them. They can, on command, just suddenly make themselves happy.
Hmm.
I think is the biggest skill in life, because just suddenly be happy, right? No matter what the situation.
Yeah.
And that's after a lifetime meditation. They can do this stuff.
Yeah.
And how their brain fires up. But psychedelics is a shortcut to this, but it has to be trained. And what if it's not trained, or what if it's trained in the wrong way? And when they start doing stuff, he said that his friend was like, he saw someone's brain lighting up with mushrooms. So it's lighting up like Las Vegas. And I had to use that quote in the story because this is what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it was a Cary Grant when he tried acid. He said, I've wasted my life until this point because of what it made him do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can unlock things. It can be a very beneficial thing, I believe. It can also be a very detrimental thing.
Yeah.
It's about knowing how to control your brain and what it can do. And then just take muscles, right? You can train your whole life. And then imagine if you're giving a healthy steroid and you can get a bit bigger. But what if you don't do it? You take anabolic steroids, every muscle in your body expands and you get stupid jawlines. And any technology can be used for good or bad. And that's what I was trying to come across with this.
Yeah.
And they were trying for good. And they were working, but one element went bad and it could have stopped there, but it got shut down, the project.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it didn't properly get shut down like they thought. And then what are the consequences? That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, what was surprising to me is, so first of all, the element that goes bad, I mean, that was really like, I was just like, oh wow, why would you do that to someone? Like, you know what I mean? Like I was like I understood the aspect of it, but why would you make it that powerful, you know, what was being done to this person? And then the other interesting thing to me was when that person went and sought help for whatever was happening to them, the thing that stuck out to me was that the scientist involved was like, I can't because of legal reasons. Like I might get sued or I might get, you know, something might happen to me. And I was just like, whoa, like that to me was just so, in a way, kind of like callous, right? But it speaks to so much of like, where our science is going, right? In that it's being developed by these giant corporations and the people in the midst of it really don't have any control as to like where, what it's being used for or the people that it may harm in the long run, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you definitely nailed it in this. I mean, there's, again, this is probably my favorite to date, but I think mostly because it speaks to horror movies and it speaks to superheroes and it speaks to like superpowers and that sort of thing. And I mean, you've just made like a total and complete package in this that, I just kept flipping the pages and was like, right on, like, keep going. Like, I want to see more of this. I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, much like some of the great horror franchises, you kind of leave the door open to like a tuned universe, or like, are you already thinking of something else, or what are your thoughts on that? Or you just want to leave us all hanging?
I'm leaving it open. If people want more, there's more. I have ideas and not a problem for me. I have lots of different stories I want to tell.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to, it's interesting. It's like songwriters. You never know what is going to resonate with the public. So this is your favorite so far. Other people's favorite may have been Amputation Capital, not your favorite. Other people like Twisted Dark. It depends. So if people really like this, they want more, I will definitely make more.
Sure.
If not, I've got other things I want to make.
Yeah.
Like Tabernacle, which I think is going to be the best thing I ever make in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great. Wait, sorry. So that's the next book that's coming out?
No, I've got several other books coming out. They're in production right now. Tabernacle won't be out for at least 2 years.
Oh, wow.
But I'm doing something stupid. I'm writing like 7 volumes off the bat. Wow. Off the bat from it, because it's massive, maybe even more than 7. So it's good to go. It's huge what I've made. It's about the world's first prison for supervillains. Because America holds 4% of the world's population, yet it has 26% of the world's prison population.
Yeah.
America's solution is to lock people up, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah, you're right.
And what happens if some of your population start to get powers? So you have criminals who have powers.
Wow.
What then?
Yeah.
And that's the premise of it. And this guy builds the world's first prison for supervillains. It's called Tabernacle. He bases it on the specifically Norwegian, but basically Scandinavian model of treating people decently. And he speaks to the Senate. He shows them a photo. This is an American pig in a pigsty, and it's filthy with mud. This is an African pig, and it looks so much healthier, and it's all clean. Yeah. Pigs are smarter animals than dogs. They will look after themselves. They'll keep things clean, but you have to respect them.
Yeah.
If we don't respect pigs, this is what happens. If we don't respect humans, what do you think happens?
Yeah.
And he shows, and anyway, but the thing is, his motivation is good, but he has pressure from the Senate against him because it's a public-private partnership, from his board of directors, from the employees, from the publicity, from people in general. And when things start to go wrong, which they will do, what happens? That's the story.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait. So I got to wait 2 years for that, Neil?
At least. I mean, I have so much of the stories, but then I have other things I've written, and I'm also making comics for other creators, celebrities or producers in Hollywood. That's a side thing we're doing now.
Oh, nice. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds awesome. But, you know, congratulations on Tuned. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. The final question I guess I want to ask is, the cover is a bit kind of misleading in a way, I thought. Like, I thought I was going to get some kind of like Western, and there was going to be like a violin involved and stuff like that. Can you speak to me about the cover? Because once I opened the book and I started reading, like at first I was like, okay, like where are we going with this? And I understand how it kind of plays out in the broader sense, but you know, like this, when I finished the story and I went back to the cover, I was like, huh, like what can you give me any thoughts to that?
Well, the cover does have a dead body and a pig's severed head.
Yes, I know it does, but it also has a guy that looks like a cowboy and he's holding a violin or a fiddle in his hand. And I was like, oh, okay, I thought this was going to be some gruesome thing about music. You know, there's a pig's head in the back, but I don't know, rednecks do what rednecks do. I don't know what they're doing with, you know, they're like a little log cabin or farms or whatever. I apologize to any rednecks out there, but I was just saying, like... You know, I'm just saying, like, I thought it was going to be a Western, quite honestly. And then I opened the book. So it's not a criticism. I just wanted some thought into like what was going on there. But, you know, or maybe it is a criticism. Take it as it was given, Neil.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Love it. Yeah. Okay. So if you thought it was about a Western, then that's my fault for not doing enough research and sending it to enough people. It's just because the character, when you first see him, he's wearing a hat.
Yeah.
And he's meant to be wearing a hat in a lot of the scenes because he's covering the scars on his head from what happened to him.
Sure, sure, sure.
So that's why he's wearing the hat. I never crossed my mind people would think it was Western.
Well, that's just my opinion.
Violin is because it's the hardest instrument to play.
Okay.
It is... it's like a guitar. You have frets, so you push your finger and then behind the fret, doesn't matter where exactly, you'll hit the right note. With the violin, even a millimeter off doesn't get exactly the right note. You have to be so precise.
Yeah
And that's the thing about it's meant to be a sort of metaphor for the thing they did to their brains and the fact that Mike, he's so precise, he's so fast. When he plays the violin, he plays it like no one else can.
Yeah.
And you see the vibrations playing beautifully.
Yeah.
That was a metaphor which like if it with good stories, in my opinion, you don't realize until after someone points out to you, but it's there.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was
okay. Understood. I appreciate it. Anyway, the book is called Tuned. It is currently on Kickstarter by T-Pub Publishing. Neil
Gibson. T-Pub Comics.
T-Pub Comics. Why did I say publishing? See, T-Pub Comics. And it's Neil Gibson. Your name is Neil Gibson. Always a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Neil.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
I am very happy for your return. I love the book. I actually contributed to it before this interview. So I very much enjoyed it. And I hope the Kickstarter, you know, starts rolling, you know, even further. I hope you rake in more money. Any final thoughts, Neil? Where can people find you online?
I'm rubbish at social media, but...
As am I.
At T-Pub Comics for Instagrams, Twitter and Facebook, I think those are the big ones. I don't know. I don't know this stuff.
What's the website URL, Neil? Stop burying yourself.
Website tpubcomics.com.
Tpubcomics.
Tons of free stuff there. If you want to read any of my stuff, you can sign up. You get a bunch of free comics sent from us, and you can choose whether you like my stuff or not, and then carry on or not.
Well, I think it's almost like a money back guarantee that people will like your stuff. I mean, tpubcomics.com. Neil Gibson, thank you as always for joining me. I really appreciate your time. I know that you are like not just an ocean away, a country away for me. But thanks again. And everyone go to Kickstarter, look up Tuned, and contribute some money, because I think this is a really great project and I very much enjoyed it. And I will wrap this up by saying that my name is Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out at parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are currently on Facebook and Instagram. We have abandoned the hellscape that is Twitter, because you know why. You know why. I'm not going to say it, but you know why. Thank you as always for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye. Part-Time Fanboy.